Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. As more and more states legalize marijuana, are more young people using it? Well, new research suggests that the answer is no. There does not seem to be a national increase in teen use of marijuana. The researchers suggest that there are fewer teens considered high risk. Joining us, as she does most Mondays, is Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg. Welcome.
Thanks, Deb.
So what is this new research?
So it's a paper and a commentary just out today in the journal Pediatrics. And I thought, you know, now that Massachusetts has joined the states that have legalized marijuana and we're expecting retail sales in a few months, I thought it might be of particular interest to residents and especially parents who could be concerned that legalizing recreational marijuana could lead to more teen marijuana use, even though, of course, it still won't be legal for minors.
Right. But the idea is that if kids see that something is legal, then they're more likely to try to figure out how to use it, right?
Right. They're more likely to figure it's okay. So in the debates over legalizing marijuana, opponents have argued that legalization will lead to more marijuana use by teens because their perception of the risk of using marijuana will drop. And exactly as you said, that they figure if it's legal, you know, it must be pretty much okay. But there's been this really interesting paradox in the data. So over the last decade or so, even as more and more states legalized first medical marijuana and then recreational marijuana, the surveys have found no overall rise in the prevalence of adolescents using marijuana.
Which is pretty surprising.
Right. So this study in pediatrics tried to figure out whether the perception of risk maybe just doesn't matter that much anymore in whether teens use marijuana, or there was another hypothesis that maybe a big drop in adolescent use of alcohol and cigarettes is having an effect.
And there has been a big drop in that, right?
There certainly has. So it's actually this wonderful public health victory that you don't hear about very much, but cigarette smoking among teens is way, way down compared to even a couple of decades ago. But marijuana use is pretty much flat. There's just been a slight decline in the last couple of years.
So how does that all fit together, Carrie? What's the relationship between, say, cigarette smoking and marijuana?
Well, so I spoke with Dr. Sharon Levy. She's the director of the Adolescent Substance Abuse and Addiction Program at Boston Children's Hospital, and she co-wrote a commentary to go with this new paper in pediatrics. She says the key here is in what researchers call high-risk kids and low-risk kids. So the high-risk kids are the ones who report using alcohol or tobacco because drug use, substance use, tends to go together.
So kids who use one substance are likely to use the others. And, you know, we've seen really dramatic decreases in alcohol use rates over the past 40 years and in tobacco use rates, particularly over the past 20 years. So overall, there's been an increase in the number of kids who don't use any of those substances, and they're a relatively lower-risk group and less likely to try marijuana in the first place.
So, and that group of low-risk kids has been really growing because there's been so much messaging that, look, smoking and drinking are really unhealthy, especially smoking.
So less smoking, less drinking among teenagers, so then they're generally less likely to use marijuana?
Right. It's almost like smoking can be like a gateway drug to marijuana. But Dr. Levy says at the same time, you've got changes in policy that make kids more likely to think marijuana is okay.
And that pushes rates up. So you're seeing one force pushing rates down and another force pushing rates up. And on average, what we've seen is pretty flat rates. But you have to look at those flat rates next to what's going on with alcohol and tobacco to really see the whole picture.
So from her point of view, this is kind of a glass half empty, right? Like we could have seen drops in the rate of teen marijuana use as dramatic as the drops in alcohol or tobacco use, but there were these countervailing forces.
And some parents might say maybe they'd rather have their kids use marijuana than drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes because there are adverse effects with those things, drunk driving or lung cancer, right?
Right, of course. But I just thought this was an interesting element to add to the discussion. You know, this finding that a big factor in why there's not more teen marijuana use is that kids are drinking and smoking less. So there are just fewer kids that are considered at high risk.
And what about, though, when we hear about the opioid epidemic in teenagers? Does the study mention that at all?
So it doesn't mention that, but it does point up really how dramatic the drop in smoking has been among kids. Like even between 2005 and 2016, it dropped by like 50%. It's a huge difference.
And so what does Dr. Levy think needs to to be done?
Well, so she says the state should look to strategies that have worked with alcohol and tobacco, like ensuring that taxes make marijuana pricey, restricting the places where it can be used.
The way smoking cigarettes was restricted by secondhand smoke laws, right?
Right, right. And she says education is important.
Parents and other adults who work with kids, and certainly kids themselves, you know, I think there's a role for really making sure that people understand what the risks of marijuana use are to the developing brain. So that's got to be an important part of the package, but it won't be the whole thing because, you know, education alone isn't really enough.
And Deb, Dr. Levy has a special perspective on the risks of marijuana because she's been treating kids with substance use issues for the last 15 years. And she's been sounding the alarm about some of the changes that she's been seeing in the clinic.
In changes in terms of the strains of marijuana that are out there and how powerful marijuana can be?
Right. So she says lately kids have been coming in with different symptoms. She's seeing more psychotic symptoms like hallucinations and paranoia, more of this nasty cyclic vomiting syndrome that's been linked to marijuana use.
And that presumably, those potential side effects could increase the perception of risk. Right?
Yes, if word gets spread around. Right. You know, my favorite quote comes from a leading expert on psychosis at McLean Hospital who tells his students, smoke all the pot you want after you're 30.
Carrie Goldberg, editor of WBUR's Common Health. Thank you, as always.
You're welcome.
Only about 20% of engineering degrees in this country go to women. But a prestigious engineering college in Needham is proud to be an outlier. Half its students are women. WBUR's Fred Tice has more and tells us how women affected a recent redesign at Olin College.
The machine shop is a big deal at Olin. The college prides itself on classes with project-based learning. But Daniela Foss, the director of design and fabrication operations at Olin, remembers being discouraged from using the machines in the shop and wants to make sure all students feel comfortable there.
Engineering is so much about being able to produce something at the end, and we haven't really done that in the past.
Foss's colleague, Associate Professor of Mechanical Engineering Aaron Hoover, says the machine shop did not encourage students to build their own projects.
So when Olin started out, we started out with a very traditional shop space where, as a student, you came in with a technical drawing that was, you know, defined to a certain specification, and you would either hand it off to have someone else make it for you, or if you're very lucky, you can make it yourself. And that was actually kind of at odds to a certain degree with the sort of anti-disciplinary, multidisciplinary culture that we have here.
In the welding shop, junior Claire Kincaid is taking advantage of the redesign.
It's been so amazing. We have new printers. We got rid of our old laser cutter that didn't work so well. We have new equipment, new welding bays. I love welding, so I'm really happy about the welding bays. This room is generally just so much nicer than it was.
Kincaid is cutting a poem out of a piece of steel using a plasma torch. She has been working with metal her whole life, but many students at Olin have not. One change to accommodate them, hand tools are no longer strewn about. Junior Sarah Ballantyne says each tool has a place on a board now, along with a label saying what size it is and what it's called.
If someone told me, hey, hand me a dead blow hammer, prior to this wall, I would have no idea what they were talking about, and I probably would have handed them a mallet. So when someone says, I need a, you know, 19-millimeter metric wrench, you can say, oh, got it, here you go, just by grabbing it off the wall.
Ballantyne says women can bring a different approach to how some of the big machines are set up for students who might find them daunting.
A big stereotype that can be true is women have a little bit more caution in the spaces. And so when they come in, they have a little bit more awareness of the people who are working around them.
Another difference, she says, is women are sometimes more observant.
Something I think personally I as a woman can bring to the table is I can look around and say, like, oh, that doesn't really seem correct to me.
That focus on safety is something Jason Chow observes, too.
The women in our shop do definitely tend to take fewer stupid risks. And then also, when you're training women versus training men, the women tend to actually pay a little bit more attention, I found. the woman will still actually engage with the training, whereas the man might be trying to show off the skills that he already has.
Another redesign? Students teach other students now. So whoever wants to use the plasma torch to cut metal can go to Sarah Ballantyne.
We've been able to see a transition from it being a bit more of a hardcore, mechy, and like male-dominated space to a very open learning space for students here.
All kinds of students, Daniela Foss says.
We'd love to. I mean, I don't think computer scientists necessarily should be afraid to walk into the shop and do cool stuff.
And doing cool stuff is what Olin sees as an integral part of its educational experience.
And that was WBUR reporter Fred Tice. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek, with help from Zoe Mitchell, Lily Tyson, and Brian Bouchard. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hati. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.